Although we've been citizens of the United States since 1917, we're a different culture, ethnically, linguistically. We are a nation, although in this country we're not recognized as a nation because we're recognized as an ethnic group. Well, all you got to do is look at our people, and you see that I think we have almost as many variables and of people as in Hawaii, and that's saying a lot. We have the entire range of people in our island, and I think that's reflected also here in the Puerto Ricans who have come here and who have also intermarried. Our rate of intermarriage has always been high, even in Puerto Rico, where about a third of Puerto Ricans have non-Hispanic surnames. That's an interesting statistic because if you're German and you go to Puerto Rico and you settle there and you marry and you have children, your children aren't Germans. They're Puerto Rican. Over here, you'll be German forever, or Irish or Italian or whatever. In any case, getting back to the project, the project was conceived to try to begin to develop a record of this great migration. And originally, we intended to do a very basic kind of thing. Go to a half dozen places and identify certain characteristics of our community. And by doing that, we felt that, of course, we'll have it. Well, we were all wrong. We submitted a proposal to the National Endowment for the Humanities in the fall of and spring of 1979, and they liked the proposal very much, and we had asked for a planning grant, and they gave us money for 6 months to do some planning and to travel around the country, which I did. That was the first time I came to Hawaii in 1980, in January 1980, when we had a five-day storm of the 10 days that I was here. But anyway, that's where it started. And then by the time I got back from the 6 months of travel, which I was on the road pretty much 6 months, meeting a great many people, that's around the time when I met the key people here. We developed the concept of the Padrino Agency, which is a Padrino organization, a Godfather Agency, which kind of has the negative connotations in English. But in our culture, Padrino is a very important relationship, Godfather, compadrasco system. So we identified immediately the United Association. That's when I met Blaze, and I met a number of others who are here. And we, at that point, proposed to the association that they become the Godfather, the sponsors, and they agreed to it. And we did this in 24 other cities throughout the country. We connected up directly all over the country. And when I got back from the 6 months, we realized that it was impossible to do it the way we originally conceived it. Well, that was the idea of the six-month planning grant. We then resubmitted a proposal to the National Endowment for the Humanities, and we received a grant for 2 years. And during that period, we have visited more than 20 communities all the way to Hawaii and Puerto Rico. We did the story on the returned migrants. And of course, during all this time, we developed other ideas. We also had ideas about developing a collection, a Puerto Rican collection, to describe the diaspora. The diaspora that's spreading out, which essentially is what you see back here. The Boricua Hawaiiana is very much what we had in mind in terms of the development of that collection. That is to gather old photographs, old documents, and so on, that describe the experience, the migratory experience. We also intend to publish a couple of books out of this, and out of this also has come an attempt to develop a national Puerto Rican cultural center that will be based in Washington, D.C., and a number of other ideas that I won't trouble you with now. But this has become very much of an ongoing project. We intend to, the idea now is to institutionalize it within Boricua College. Boricua College is the sponsor of the project. They're the only four-year bilingual bicultural institution in the country. And we're very proud of that. We have about 1,200 students now with no federal assistance because we don't get any federal money. So that we're very proud of that. We have two campuses, one in Brooklyn and one in New York, in the Upper West Side, right in the middle of the barrio. And if you're ever in New York City, I wish you would look them up because they're great people. In any case, Boricua is very much the home for the project, although we operate out of Washington, D.C. We've learned a great deal, as I said before, about our community in the short 2.5 years that we've been working with it, although I have been involved with this community for many years before that. Many of the things that have happened kind of spontaneously, where I have learned certain things, or I fell by luck into one thing or the other. But one of the most interesting experiences, of course, is the story of those who have gone back to Puerto Rico. And the story is that no Puerto Rican comes to the United States ever to stay. We never come to stay. And we can be here 40, 50 years, and even die here. But there's a very brisk business in terms of kind of a little bit on the downside, but in terms of transporting people back there after they die to be buried in Puerto Rico. That's right. So the story of the return migrants is rather important, and we felt that it would be very much a part of this because this is not meant to be a documentary of Puerto Ricans in Puerto Rico. The Puerto Ricans that we photographed in Puerto Rico are part of the mainland story because they spent a good part of their lives here. Just one example, the couple there, back there, Ismael and Ana Colon, and I know all these people, they're all my friends, Ismael and Ana Colon over here, they spent 30 years in Paterson, New Jersey. She happens to be an ex-nun, and he was a seminary student at one time. They met in Puerto Rico and decided that the life of the church was not for them. They eloped to Paterson, New Jersey. They married in Paterson, and they stayed in Paterson for 32 years. And they raised a family there, four children. And then his factory closed down and moved to the Midwest, and they didn't want to do that. They said, the heck with it, we're going back. So they came back to Puerto Rico. And what did they find? Well, they found some very difficult economic circumstances. He couldn't find a job. Luckily, they have a program in Puerto Rico where poor families will get a quarter of an acre, what they call a parcela, which is what they have there. And they're kind of half self-sustaining. They grow some yuca and bananas and yautía and so on. And he's a day laborer. He goes out and he's a day laborer. Now, the most interesting part of this story is their children. The four children, had never been in Puerto Rico, with the exception of the oldest one who spent the summer when he was younger. So that when I was interviewing them, the young lady says, "Can you imagine, Frank, getting on a plane in Paterson in Newark, and then in the morning, and then in the evening, you over here?" And she looks around, it's a very deserted place, it was very dark, you know. The cultural shock was tremendous. And then they find that, unfortunately, that their Puerto Rican brothers there don't really appreciate that them because they can't speak Spanish too well. And I think that our Hawaiian brothers understand that, and sisters. They can't speak Spanish too well. They're called Yankees, and that's all in there in that little article that we did. They have a program down there, funded by the Office of Education. Would you believe this? But it's a migrant program for migrant children in the States. But they convinced the Department of Education, Department of Labor, that they were migrants and that they effectively were a different language because their language was English. So they have this program to teach them in English. To teach them, as a matter of fact, Spanish also. And it's a high school called Ramon Power High School. Ramon Power is one of the great men in our history. They now presently have 40% of that, at that time, 40% of the student population were returned migrants, were returned, you know, they were, he said they were planning to take the school over, you know, eventually. But what was more interesting was that most of them did not want to go back, that they liked it, that in spite of all the problems, they liked living there, and that they were going to stay, and that by God, they were going to make it. And at one point, I started talking in Spanish to them, and they understood what I was trying to do, and we had a very interesting conversation for about a half hour in Spanish. I refused to speak English there. Only one of many, many, many stories, everyone, practically every one of these photographs here, I could talk for at least this long on, and I could talk some more about that experience. I think the most important thing that we have found is that wherever we've gone, that that we identify with our culture, that we identify as Puerto Ricans, no matter what. But I also have to say this, that this has been the only place where we hyphenate our nationality. We say Hawaiian Puerto Rican or Puerto Rican Hawaiian. I have never found that anywhere else. And that's very encouraging in the sense that, you know, our people here are proud of the fact that they're Hawaiian, are proud of the fact that they're Puerto Rican, and Hawaiian Puerto Ricans. We don't find that anywhere else in the country, and I have some ideas about why that would be, but we're over here for a while now, and many of us are second and third generation, even fourth generation. I think we're on our fourth generation here now. Right? So there are many other things that have happened to us as a result of this project, mostly good things. I have some very funny things that have happened and some weird things that have happened to me in my travels and so on. I misplaced all my equipment at one time, and I thought it was lost. And then a day and a half later, a young man comes in, walks in with all my equipment, and said, "Well, we got a bag for you." And he didn't say why or when or where. And that was it. That was in Chicago. And I didn't ask any questions. But they got all my equipment back intact, you know. But there are many other things that have happened like that. And overall, it's been a tremendous experience for us, for me personally. I think that I'm going to try to continue to do this for as long as I can. The money ran out, the federal money ran out, and we did not reapply for additional monies. And the reason for that was very simple. We had 2.5 years, and that was plenty. I think there are many other people with worthwhile projects that deserve a crack at it. And we were asked to submit for more, and we didn't. We said, no, we're going to try to make it. We're going to try to get some support from some foundation. But so far, no foundation has stepped forth because of all the economic conditions. Before, they never paid too much attention to our projects. Now that we have a good project, now they tell us that we can't give you money because of the Reaganomics and the economic conditions and so on. But we still get very little support from foundations or from corporations, and that is the absolute truth. In any case, we're continuing with it. The college is supporting some of the overhead expenses, and the small staff that I have are not getting paid now. So we're all kind of just pushing along, trying to see how long we can keep it going. But we do, we have a lot of faith, and we have a lot of support throughout the country. We've developed a very good network of people and organizations throughout the country. And that's going to be turned into a national organization, a cultural alliance for Puerto Rican groups throughout the country. All in all, as I said before, if nothing else, it has brought me to Hawaii 3 times. So I'm really appreciative, and I'm very happy to be here. I want to open the floor for any questions you may have. And whatever it is, I'd be happy to try to deal with it. See that. I'm from Utuado. I was born in Puerto Rico, in the center of the island. Very historic part of the country, and we migrated to New York when I was 9 years old in 1939. That was when they still had signs up that said no Puerto Ricans need apply, and my father had a hard time getting a job, although he was a certified public accountant in Puerto Rico. He had a very difficult time getting a job. He eventually got a job with Moore McCormick Lines, the shipping export lines, for $32 a week, which in those days was not bad. But never as an accountant. He could never apply his trade here. He was just a clerk type. Well, we've been here since 39, and I've never lived in Puerto Rico since then. I've gone back many times, but I've never lived there, and I don't think I would want to live there at this point, the way the country is right now. It's a very, very tough situation there. Extremely high unemployment. A lot of dissatisfaction with the way things are, and a lot of uneasiness, and there's a lot of back and forth to the mainland. People don't know what to do. You know, it's really, really sad. Yeah. Any other questions? Oh yeah, Museo del Barrio is probably our foremost art institution in the country. It is in Manhattan, New York, in 105th Street and Fifth Avenue, which is right on the edge of the barrio. And it is presently the fifth largest in the city. And that's saying a lot, because New York is loaded with museums. It is run by a Puerto Rican friend of mine who was born in New York. His name is Jack Agüero. And they have been very closely associated with this project. As a matter of fact, we're going to open a very large exhibit in November probably something like 200, three times the size of the exhibit. So if you happen to be in New York around November, that's the place to go. They have been extremely successful, and Jack, of course, the director, he's a very creative person, and he has brought a great deal of good art to the place, where today the museum is considered one of the top museums in the country. We've exhibited in nine places. This is our ninth exhibit, and we've exhibited in museums in three places, and we've exhibited in the City Hall in Harrisburg, which is a brand new City Hall. And nothing to compare with this, of course, nothing to compare with this. But it's really a very nice building, and we opened it. We opened the day the City Hall opened was when we opened our show. So we inaugurated the City Hall, and that exhibit went very well. We're continuing to exhibit, and the interesting part about it is that the local organizations are on their own, with a little bit of help from us, applying for and receiving grants from the state humanities and arts councils. That's important, because the National Endowment did not give us any money for exhibiting. They said we just want the money to develop the material, to go out there and get the interviews, which are very important, the interviews and the photographs. And then since then, the states have been picking up the cost of the exhibit. So that we're here as a result of a grant that was given to the Hawaii Heritage Society through the sponsors were the Puerto Rican Heritage Association and United Puerto Rican Association of Hawaii. So it's really a very nice combination of people. And the fact is that it is supported by the state is very important also. That was part of the idea at the beginning. Anything else? No, I have not. As a matter of fact, I was in Boston. That's as far north as I've gotten. And I wanted to get to France, Rhode Island, but I've not gotten to Canada, no. Yeah. Yeah. In what city is that? I want to talk to you about this afterwards, because that's how I pick up information. But I got a story to tell. I want to tell a story. I have a friend who went on a tour of the Far East, and he was in Bombay, and he went to a marketplace, and there, of course, there's several snake charmers in the marketplace in Bombay, you know, with the cobra snakes out of the basket and all that. And he was watching this one, you know, all of a sudden, the snake did something that he wasn't supposed to do. So the guy goes, "Coño," which is a Puerto Rican mild curse word. So So my friend and his wife, they were shocked. He said, "Did you hear that?" I said, "Yeah, well, yeah, well, you know, well, let's find out what's going on." So after the thing was over, they went over and said, "Excuse me, where are you from?" "I'm from Utuado, Puerto Rico. Where are you from?" this guy is the head of the humanities in Puerto Rico, so I mean, I believe him. But I think he changes the story according to what town you're from. So if you're from Arecibo, you say, well, yeah, but he was from Arecibo. But I have found also in my travels a very scattered kind of community. And I was in Helsinki, and I met a bartender, a guy from East Harlem, working as bartender in a small bar in Helsinki. And there's a small community in London. I picked up on a study that was made of Puerto Rican migration to London. And I said, what is this about? So I tracked it. And there's a small community of Puerto Ricans in London. So we're pretty much all over the country, all over the world. And I certainly hope that someday I'll be able to track all of us down all over the world. But for now, I think we have our work cut out for us here. Just doing the mainland and Hawaii, and I haven't gone up to Alaska either. See, I'm waiting for that 2 weeks in the summer that I can go up there. Yes, I'm familiar with that community because the mayor of Miami, Maurice Ferre, who's Puerto Rican, is married to one of the high society ladies from Caracas, and her mother is Puerto Rican, and so there's a very affluent Puerto Rican community there. Exactly. It's very, very interesting stories all over the country. Anything else before we thank you again? I stress what? I'm sorry. No, I think that overall the stress is not on the Spanish language. The stress, I think, the language is very important to maintain the culture. But you can see it here. Like you know, it's important, but it still survived in spite of the fact that the language has receded. And in many places, in the second and third generations in the mainland, we have the situation where the children are speaking less and less Spanish. So it is kind of a problem, but I think that it can be overcome. I think that the important thing, more important than even language, is the feeling that you're Puerto Rican, that you have a heritage and that you have a culture and you have roots and that, all of those good things. Right. Well, I do care. Sure, I do care because the language is an extremely important part of a culture. But we have to face reality, you know. That's where it's at. And I would like very much for communities to begin to think about what happens to a culture when you lose your language, and so on. But as I said, the fact of the matter is that the culture is still alive in Hawaii, and the fact of the matter is that most people cannot, and most people's first language is English, and we have to recognize that. Yeah. And I'm not gonna. Do like some of my brothers do, that put people down because they, you know, I went through that too. Yeah. Right. Sure. That's right. More and more. Yeah. I went through a period. I married a Haole girl and went through a period where I spoke very little Spanish, and I've had to relearn a lot of things. I'm reading a great deal in Spanish now and so on. So it's always, you know, you always have to keep at it, otherwise you lose it. Well, I think that they don't even consider themselves American, you know. No. Oh, yes, but not. I don't think they consider themselves, only in the sense that they're citizens and that they can be drafted. And many of us have been drafted, and many of us have died in the wars. But I think that the attitude depends on what society you come from, what level of society you come from. The higher up you go, the more you are pro-American, the more you are pro, you know. And I think that's pretty much the case everywhere. The working class and the poor people really couldn't care less. It's just a matter of survival and so on. But there's a very strong developing middle class there, and most of them are pro-statehood, for the statehood. Yeah, most of them are. But I think most people really, when you scratch them, they're really independent. They're really for independence, yeah. That's always a live issue down there, and I just don't think it should be an issue. I don't think there should be any question about it. You know, we should be a sovereign nation, that's all, period. And I don't think it should be an issue. I don't think it should even be put to a vote, like they do every once in a while, you know? Yeah, and I say that everywhere I go to. If there are no other questions, I'd like to thank you again for coming. And God bless you all.
Thank you.